Look, Matt.
Where? Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong. Las Culturistas calling.
I suspect a lot of things.
This one. And by this one, of course, I'm referencing the episode. This one.
Well, I'm suspecting a lot of things because I'm very suspicious in my sort of state of being right now after watching such shows as The Undoing.
Oh,
and
it's a whodunit.
It's a whodunit. And The Real Housewives of Potomac, where I'm suspicious of people's intentions, of old wounds being sort of torn open, the sutures being
ripped
out.
Speaking of sutures, you know what else has some weird drama going on is Grey's Anatomy. And that's why I'm so happy to... And we're not going to bring him in yet because we haven't had nearly enough time together.
He's giving us the scoop on some things that I can't really believe.
I actually have to say, this just came through from the panel. Remember the panel from a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it's Megan McCain and Abby Huntsman.
So they sort of are our panel. Everything that gets happened on the pod gets run through them, etc. But they just came through with this new title that our guest has. Grey's Anatomy Special Correspondent.
Yes.
Oh my God. This is huge. This is so huge that he's here. But we're not talking to him yet. We have to catch up with each other. I'm not watching a single show where I'm not suspicious of people's true motives.
You know, I don't know if it's the seasonal thing. I don't know if it's because second lockdown is upon us.
Or both.
But yeah, very suspicious.
Yeah.
There's not much to catch up on. You and I have checked in a lot over the last 2 days. I'm just excited to bring in our guest. But are there any items that you want to
God, you are so rude. You're so fucking rude.
I'm so
suspicious of you. No, I'm really suspicious of you. Because you have blown through this intro. You're so excited to not talk to me because I guess we've spoken enough. So suspicious. It's so suspicious. You're not cathartic today.
Everyone, okay, so our guest doesn't know this. I'm sorry, you know what? I don't mean to like cater to the guest too much, but our guest has not been in the podcast space for a long time, so there's been some new sort of fun little inside jokes that are on the pod now. We say the word cathartic when we want to say iconic. I feel like you and I don't have to perform the friendship when the mics record. You know what I'm saying? We are friends offline.
Yeah, I just want you to ask me how I am.
How are you?
Good. Let's bring in the guest. Anyway, this guest is a celebrated icon of guesting on Las Culturistas. He famously was... he was our first ever Lost episode. Do you remember that one? Remember when we recorded a full-ass episode?
Yes, we did.
And we lost it, and then we were forced to have him back. Thank God he was cathartic when he came back, because earned his place as the first ever Las Culturistas Icon Award winner, which we haven't given one out in a while.
The only recipients of the award are Pat, our guest, our Rachel Pegram, Annie Donnelly,
mm-hmm.
and I think there's one more.
Yeah, but I'm not ready to say.
But those are the three.
Those are really the three. And our guest has sort of, you know, become a cultural icon, I think many would say.
Yes.
You know them from the Seek Treatment podcast. You know them from their celebrated work in film and television. The projects are upcoming.
Oh my God.
he's making me laugh already. He had a cousin whose vest was featured on an episode of Scream Queens, the Ryan Murphy show.
He had a Swedish woman tell him that you would do well in Europe sexually.
Yes.
And one time, someone went up to Colin Quinn. His aunt went up to Colin Quinn.
His mom's friend went up to Colin Quinn on a beach and told him that he did comedy. So these are all his credits.
Oh, and the last one, we have to mention all of them. The last one is he was famously blacklisted from my show Live on Broadway.
yes, it was famous drama. Honestly, I wish the Housewives cameras had been rolling on that one.
That would have been
quite the episode / reunion opportunity.
What would you be wearing at that year's reunion?
What would I have been wearing at that year's reunion?
Yeah,
probably
2015.
Yeah. So I was sort of at that time doing like way too much product in my hair, slick to
Me
the
too.
Side moment. And Bowen, you actually, for many years throughout your 20s, had too much hair.
I had a lot of hair. I thought, you know, the tall pomp was the thing. In many ways, it was.
Yeah, but I think that you've settled into your haircut.
My haircut, which was dictated by my glasses, my two half moons, where it just did not look good with the long hair. Yeah, I wanted to centralize it. I wanted to draw the eye to the glasses. And if I'm giving too much height on my hair, then like the center, sort of the center of whatever vision is off. So had to lower the hair, had to sort of pare down the hair. And then just to make sure that the glasses were sort of the, had the marquee role.
And then you have sort of me, no glasses in sight, and that's why I can have the height.
Yeah.
And that's rhyming on purpose, sort of on purpose.
Sort of.
And you know what they say? You know what they say? When they go low, talking about you with your hair, we go high, talking about me with my hair.
They do say that. I am so excited for our guest. We texted him to see if he wanted to do the show. He said, the time has come and the time is now.
The time has come. The time is now. Now more than ever, we need our guest. And also, really, everyone's been sort of demanding that the guest return.
He's been in the conversation. And we've also just independently said on this show in recent episodes, which our guest does not listen to.
Yeah, he doesn't listen to the podcast. He doesn't listen.
We've brought him up many times. We go, God, we miss Pat so much. Isn't he the funniest? Mm-hmm. And we love him so much. Everyone, please welcome. Would you have just something else to say?
No, I'll say it to her face.
Okay, say it to her face. Please welcome
Pat Regan.
Oh my God. You guys, I just want to say to all the listeners, you know me for my upcoming projects, and I'm so glad. you may have seen me. You guys may have seen me in my upcoming projects.
I forgot the name of the Paul Lucia show. Is it Hacks?
I think it doesn't have a name right now.
Okay, yet. Well, let's just say there's a show out there. It doesn't have a name. Am I not allowed to say?
I actually have no idea what I'm allowed to about that. But I will say, you know, I will say this, is I think I did write on a show that I do think will be very, very good and funny, and everyone should run, not walk, to watch.
Gotta
it.
Tell you, I read the pilot, and I thought it was absolutely excellent.
It was, you know what, I helped a friend, I always told the story to the showrunners, because I really thought it spoke to kind of an authentic appreciation I had for the show, mm-hmm. is before I was attached to the project, actually.
Of course.
I was helping a dear friend self-tape for a role, and you know, you mm-hmm. get these sides in this business. I'm going to take everyone, okay, masterclass, my masterclass is the entertainment business.
Thank God. So now that we know, what's the first line of your commercial, your big commercial for it?
Oh my God. Oh, now you're making.
And it's a tight close. It's a tight single on you. Just think about that. In like a WeWork.
Yeah.
He's waving his hands at me, gesticulating at me aggressively.
You wanted to bring him in.
Sorry. What's your first line?
I've made my career in my entertainment. I've made my career in the entertainment business, and it's a business that you can do.
Oh wow! I am on board. Take my money, bitch! Oh my God!
No,
wow.
You wouldn't think this, but I have a year subscription to MasterClass.
Do you?
You wouldn't think. Yeah, I just,
have you taken one? For some reason, I see you. Even though you're not necessarily a vocalist, I see you taking Christina Aguilera's MasterClass.
No, you know what? I didn't. But you know what? I did actually say it to my sexual partner this afternoon.
Your same-sex sexual partner.
I brought up Brittany and Christina, and you know what? I had the most intelligent thought about them. I said, you know, it's so funny that they got compared so much because they truly are so different.
Say that. Say that.
And you know where it stems from, actually?
Queens. Tell us.
It comes from a dearth of pop stars in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Like, they were just our two female pop stars, so everyone's like, wow, they're just alike. But it's like, if they were here today, it would literally be like comparing Billie Eilish to Dua Lipa, which you wouldn't do.
You wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it.
But if they were the only two, then you might.
Okay, Bowen, are you feeling the same way that I am? Read the erasure of Jessica Simpson and Mandy Moore.
I know, but you can't lie that they were the two. I'm actually gonna
You can't lie that they were the two.
I want to pitch this as a rule of culture. When it comes to Brittany and Christina, you can't lie.
That's accepted.
That's
rule of culture number
16.
When it comes to Brittany and Christina, you can't lie that they were the two. They really were.
You're so right. Okay,
but wait, is it a truth that you can't lie about that Mandy and Jessica would make up the four?
Absolutely, they would be the four.
But the fact, no, because Jessica and Mandy have both ventured outside of music very successfully. Because they were not shackled to this, I don't know, the deification of pop stars in the way that we did in the 90s and early on.
Say that.
I actually think they did benefit from not being the two. Because they could go on to be on NBC. They could go on to write a book. They could go and sell shoes. So sell shoes first and foremost.
You know what I love to say about Jessica Simpson? And my mother told me this. My mother, who's famously a hairdresser on Long Island.
It's about the extensions, isn't it?
Jessica Simpson has the best hair extensions in the biz.
You know who has the worst hair extensions in the biz?
You, the authority, should tell us now.
No, actually, this is Angelo, I think, has like observed this.
And who's Angelo?
He's my same-sex partner.
Sexual partner.
And domestic, depending on my mood. And, and I've always known it. And then when he said it, I was like, yes, that's true. It's I don't think you girls watch this franchise, but Gina from OC has just always had these extensions that, like, are comical. They're Comic-Con, these extensions.
These are Comic-Con. They belong in a damn booth.
You know when you could tell, like, the hair is going at a certain angle, and then, like, the extensions, like...
There's a shift. They break the angle.
There's, like, always such a shift with her, and it's hard.
Her hairdresser needs to get her shit together. But wait, or his. It could be gay man.
That's true.
Yeah, many stylists are.
Or hers, but lesbian woman, or... his, but gay, straight man, or theirs.
Anyone can be a hairdresser. It's actually Real Culture number 99. Anyone can be a hairdresser.
Look to your left, look to your right. They're both hairdressers.
Wait, what were we going to say?
What were we talking about, like, before we talked about Brittany and Christina?
Was it The Undoing? No.
It was the masterclass.
Yeah, masterclass.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, and I was going back to this point about the entertainment business, which would be my masterclass.
Yeah.
And this goes actually ultimately back to my upcoming project. So for you young girls out there who are trying to break into the entertainment business, what you need to know is that sometimes you do these things called sides, which are a little part of a script that you read to try to get a role in TV and film. Mm-hmm. Or even a play.
Do
plays have sides?
I think that I'll ask the panel.
Okay. And so I was helping a friend do a self-tape for this show that I was not attached to yet. And I said, you get these sides.
Oh my God.
Is there anything more galvanizing than getting sides in this town where every side you get, it's like, well, this got made. So truly anything can happen. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Like,
yeah.
You read some bad sides. That's all I'm
saying. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But then I read these sides with this friend and I was like, oh my God, these are the first good sides I've ever read in my life. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up writing on that show. So it was very rewarding. I was like, oh my God, I'm writing on the one show that I actually read it. And I was like, this is so good.
The one ever good show. You got to write on the one ever good show. Yeah.
That's so exciting.
It wasn't mean of me to say some sides are bad, was it?
No, not at all. It would be mean of you not to say that. Because then these writers keep writing out there and they think they don't have any work to do. Well, guess what? We've read every side and you all have work to do.
You all have work to do except for the show that I wrote on. Who does not have work to do.
Wait, and what was the story? Oh, the story that you tell the showrunners is that you loved the sides. That's the story, beginning, middle, end?
Yeah, I never knew the name of the show. I always thought of it as That Funny Show. And then I wrote on it, I was like, what show is this? I was like, I've read this somewhere when I was reading. I was like,
wow.
I was like, it was that funny show.
It was that one funny show that I liked. Well, I mean, we look forward to that upcoming project. Whether or not we can even say what the name of it is, we may have to bleep it out and the readers will be just left in the absolute dark.
I don't think we've said it yet.
I don't think it exists yet. I don't think it has a name yet.
I can come out as having said it.
No, but the name that you said is not the actual name anymore.
I know. And I'll be accountable and responsible for that moving forward.
Yes.
I have gotten word back from the panel about whether or not those sides, you call them sides, if they're from plays, and they both have their arms crossed and are looking at me and said, of course they're called sides.
Oh my God.
I'll deal with them later, but they're really upset.
You guys also said something that interested me while I was...
An honor?
While, while I was had a Hannibal Lecter mask on and my mouth was chained shut during the intro that you guys
a new feature a new feature of the pod feature. We have to chain our guests by the face before
you guys
they can
actually
speak.
Had you guys actually had it delivered to my house, the Hannibal Lecter, and you made the person who delivered it come inside and expose themselves to potential COVID.
That's because that's how iHeartRadio does it. We're a corporate entity now.
We have resources.
He said Matt Bowen and the team at iHeartRadio says, I have to come in and do prolonged exposure. And I said, oh my God, that feels so at risk, but come on in, girl.
Feels so at risk.
At risk, but come on in, girl. That's what I say to all my kidding. Lovers.
Oh my God, Ben. I do want to hear about your sexual tryst you had recently, Bowen Yang.
With
I don't
whom?
Know about this.
When I was off the thread.
What does a tryst mean to you?
It means you forced my hand, fully penetrative anal sex.
Okay.
At this point, that's what it means.
I just want to like put a time to this. This was a couple months ago.
I guess it was when I was off the thread for a bit, and then Pat I came
will,
back.
So we have a thread, and Pat will sort of leave it sometimes and need to be walked back to the couch by usually Joel.
Yes.
Joel is Mandy Cohen.
Sometimes I take my microphone off, I say I'm leaving. I don't want to be associated
with
this.
Which we should also say is played out. Okay?
I say you're trash. I take my microphone off, I leave the thread for weeks at a time.
And of course me, who identifies as a cast member of Real Housewives of Dallas, takes trash very seriously. And we'll let that really hurt my feelings.
I actually got that, where she was coming from with that.
Yeah, Brandy. Mm. Ms. Brandy from Dallas doesn't like being called trash because she grew up trash.
I get that.
But wait, back to the important thing at hand, which is Bowen.
I don't know what the tryst is. I really everything has been flattened in terms of my sexual memory. Isn't that alarming?
That is.
Oh my God,
I'm quite alarmed by that.
That was so inception of you sexually.
Oh, yeah, I hope I didn't. I'm always wondering. You know, it's been a second since I podcasted. I'm always wondering. I hope I'm not misstepping. Okay.
You don't have to worry about that with us.
Not with us. Not when it's literally sister life. Hashtag.
Hashtag.
Hashtag after.
We do the hashtag after.
You know, a good name for this episode could be Sisters Gone Wild.
Maybe.
We'll think about it. But I don't like when an episode name isn't organic, so I veto that. But
I don't like that either.
I don't like that either, but I think we... I think we landed on something pre-recording, which is the time has come and the time is now.
The time has come and the time is now.
Beautiful.
It's a front runner for title of ep.
It's front runner, but there's urgency to it. Okay, keep going. Sorry, Pat.
Oh, so basically what you guys were talking about when I had my Hannibal Lecter mask on was how everything, all these television shows are very suspicious. That is a huge theme of culture right now, is just feeling very suspicious of the characters, both real and fake, scripted and unscripted, in the scripted space, and of course in the unscripted space. I'm feeling very suspicious as well.
Oh, this is, no matter what, if any character appears to me fictionally or otherwise, this is what I do. And I want you to picture me as sort of Nicole Kidman in The Undoing. This is what I do. What? Matt, which to me is, go tell them, Bowen.
It's, but Matt said something so poignant to the thread last night. Nicole Kidman is the preeminent expert, master of acting shocked, but not just acting shocked, but receiving information.
Receiving shocking information.
It's so hard to do.
Yes, she's been getting a lot of shocking information on that show. And what I will also say about that show is I actually think it's the first show in history that they had the show and then they wrote the book that the show was based on and like implanted it. And like I watched a show and I was like, okay, surely this show spiritually was based on a book, but I don't actually even believe that. That would be too similar, right, to Big Little Lies. This can't also be based on a book. Then I Google it. I want to tweet something about how this show is spiritually based on a book, but not actually.
But in fact, it was based on a book.
And I was like, they just wrote that book in later. That was after the fact. Like, after the fact, they were like, okay, let's write this book. Let's fudge the number so it says 2014, and we'll say it was based on a book.
You're so suspicious. You're so suspicious that you think this maybe wasn't even based on a book. So you think the show is sort of so suspicion heavy that you think it sort of now covers the show itself and its creation, its inception.
I think the suspicion is spilling out of the show, and I think it's life imitating art in this way.
My God.
Because I think it's like in Wes Craven's New Nightmare, where Freddy comes out of the movie and kills actually the actress who plays the girl in early movies. Or tries to, but spoiler alert, God. She gets away. Yeah, that happens in Wes Craven's New Nightmare. All right, may he rest in peace. May he rest in power and peace.
So you think that it may be revealed at some point that this show perhaps maybe wasn't even based on a book, but exists to just be a Nicole Kidman vehicle that was a book to TV adaptation?
This show, it's already too on the nose. Already for it to be HBO, for it to be Nicole Kidman, for it to be the hair, for it to be like... murder and for it to be a school and for it to be a rich father of the woman and for it to be a doctor and for it to be like all these things. It's already like, okay, is this a parody sketch on Saturday Night Live? And it's so on the nose. And then for it to be based on a book, it's like, okay, now this is too much. This is literally too on the nose.
I kind of agree. I'm inclined. Something's been sort of, well, no, I mean, Matt, we talked about this. Like I would say it's not like a fantastic show. It's a fun.
We don't know that yet.
I don't know. It moves. I like that it moves very well. A lot happens.
Yeah. I will say I actively don't care about anyone in the show anymore, but I will continue watching it till it, I think I solved it actually.
So let's just say we've just seen episode 4. I don't really have the same opinions as you guys. I have loudly gasped at the end of every episode, like audibly, like this has been me. I literally sat right here where I'm sitting right now, looked up my television, and at the end of episode 3 I went like this.
I haven't had that.
They were begging us to do that.
Oh my God. You were not gasping at the end of episode 3?
What happens at the end of episode 3?
Spoiler alert for the Undoing.
No, you have to say spoiler alert!
You have to say spoiler alert!
We don't have to mention it. I know what you're talking about now.
I want to say... spoiler alert! I never get this upset.
What are you upset about?
That you wouldn't say spoiler. It's
I wasn't
going to
spoil it.
I have a fun thing to ask.
Yeah.
Subsequently, this is going to be a tangent, but we're going to come back to this.
Okay.
The central through line of the show, which is discussing The Undoing.
And but, suspicious characters in television and film.
Because as you guys know, I grew up and lived a large part of my adult life not being invested in RuPaul's Drag Race, and only I've become the person who in 2020 is walking around and saying, actually, RuPaul's Drag Race is pretty cool.
Yeah, which is cathartic.
But I've always
which is the
known,
perfect time to do it.
It literally is cathartic. But I've always known that Bones spoiled something for everyone of RuPaul's Drag Race. But I never knew what it was because it never meant anything to me. But now that it means something to me, I would love to know what Bones spoiled.
It was the season 7 episode in which Katya was eliminated.
Oh, wow.
I did not spoil it because Drag Race is live event viewing. And I put on Facebook, not even Twitter, so it was a closed sort of circle of people. Yeah. I was not broadcasting
filled
this information
out. Filled
with
your gay friends who watched the show.
And
I said,
one gay person who's not like other gays and actually doesn't watch the show and instead might even watch something
until
like,
now in 2020.
When I finally let go. And
what
finally,
did you say? Bowen, but what did you say?
I said, Katya, no. Which could have meant anything.
No, it couldn't have.
So you know what? I experienced this too with...
season 12?
A hero. No, this is separate. This is Survivor. A hero. Oh. A personal hero. A colleague who I cherish and love and think he's so funny, Chris Kelly. I spoiled Parvati's exit from Heroes vs. Villains, and I did feel really bad about that.
From Heroes vs. Villains? Winners at War.
Winners at War.
I spoiled that for him, and I did feel really bad because I tweeted, but it was like, after waiting like 10 years for her to come back and then for her to leave, it was like, And I was on Survivor Twitter and everyone was talking. Sometimes you just get caught up in the emotion of the moment. You want to feel a part of something.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like we can't wait around for LA to let our emotions out.
Thank you.
We have to live our lives in real time, not on PST.
I think that if you are living in Los Angeles and you go on Twitter during the time when you know your favorite show is on, you are asking for trouble, and Chris Kelly is very deeply wrong. And
whose side are you on in this spoiler discourse?
Well, I think they're two completely different things, because I'm not on your side, Bowen.
But it's the same. Pat committed the same offense that I did 5 years prior.
It's about intent.
What's the difference in intent?
You were stunting. You knew what you were doing. You wanted this.
You
live by the thing of, you know, you that bitch when they cause all this conversation. And you wanted to start a conversation about yourself. And I know it.
What was you? Oh, yeah.
And what?
That's what you wanted this whole time, Bowen. You wanted us to be sitting here 5 years later, and you're still the story. You're still the headline, aren't you?
The most Katia suspicious.
Katia worked so hard all season. She gets at home her moment, and I was about Bowen Yang 5 years later. 5 years later, we're talking about Katia, we're talking about Bowen, we're talking about Bowen. That's not right.
I just want to say that the most suspicious character of all in film and television is Bowen Yang.
Absolutely.
Fictional, scripted or unscripted?
I have no idea anymore.
Oh my God.
I don't know anymore. David E. Kelly? Wow. I truly almost always forget that David E. Kelly did The Undoing as well as Big Little Lies, which makes it even more
I actually didn't know that person's name before this moment. I want to challenge that person to do something completely different next time. I want to challenge him to do something completely different. I want him to write in a fantasy space. I want it to be Game of Thrones adjacent or something. I want it to feel like a whole new
David
world.
E. Kelly is like most comfortable like right out in the hallway outside of a courtroom. That's where David E. Kelly prefers to live. Like in lawyer spaces and lawyer's homes and lawyer's cars.
Mm-hmm. It's but like just like litigate or no just like just being in the courtroom is so narratively rich. Mm-hmm. Like there are so many things, there's just so many things built into that already that like I don't blame anybody for like writing a procedural or writing like just courtroom stuff. Like Search Party season 4 season 3, I'm just like, this is so well done. And like yeah.
The courtroom is a very rich place. And also, you know who I'm gagged as on the show is the lawyer who her name is Noma Dumezweni.
She's amazing.
She's incredible. And you know, this I'm about to tell you. She won an Olivier Award for playing Hermione Granger in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Oh my God.
Yes, yes. She was Hermione.
Yeah, and she received a Tony Award nomination.
What other television projects can you are you looking at a list?
I'm actually on her Wikipedia, which is where everyone, and this should be part of your masterclass. If you want information about the entertainment industry, Wikipedia is going to be the site for you.
Okay.
She's really mostly a theater actress, but she has been
You hate to see it.
She has been in Normal People on television. She has been
Was she in a show with Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Olivia
Coleman?
Olivia Coleman. Broadchurch. It was called Broadchurch.
I don't think she was in Broadchurch.
Okay, maybe I'm thinking of someone else.
I think this is a blind spot that all three of us share, which is
well, she's relatively new.
No, but I've been getting into Brit TV mystery. And that's why I'm watching Sherlock right now, and that's why I watched Broadchurch, and I started watching Elizabeth Moss BBC Murder, but it was actually too boring for me, and I had to depart.
Was that Top of the Lake?
Top of the Lake, I couldn't connect with. Oh, Happy Valley, I watched. I really enjoyed that. It's an older woman police officer who actually is down to throw some punches, get punched herself, free a girl who's been trapped, and still make it home for dinner time.
Can I just ask, like, because you have this sort of expertise in this area now that you've watched some British TV, that's how you can bring the hammer down so on The Undoing, which to you is not sort of doing, to make sort of a joke, what it should be.
Yeah, and P, I feel like, and before you answer that, I just want to put out a theory that you will, I assume you will rebut, but I think if The Undoing took place in London, you would be obsessed.
See, I want to say yes only because I know you need that right now, Bowen. You're so far out on a limb and I could feel your tension. But I don't know if I would, because I am not.
Bowen's butthole is puckered.
I'm not quite the Anglophile of some of my contemporaries. I don't know that I am. Do you know what I mean? Like, I, for instance, I famously went on record. This was actually one of the bravest things anyone's ever done. And I, the witness protection program asked if I wanted to be involved. I said, I'm actually cool. I'm going to stay.
I stand by it.
I said, I'm going to stay me. You told
Kara Meslin hard pass.
I told Kara Meslin, I said, the witness protection program wants you. They're going to set you up in Oregon. You're going to be a farmer. And I said, you know what? I think I'll go ahead and stay me this time. But thanks.
Shout out to our manager, Kara.
Kara.
Is that such a hacky premise for a sitcom? Because I love that.
Oh, witness protection.
We're just someone who like doesn't want to be in it and wants to stay themselves.
Oh, and they have to, but they're like accidentally get into it, sort of, or they like agree to go in.
No, that WPP is chasing them.
Oh, and they're like, we need you to go into this, and they're like,
and they don't want to.
Oh, that's sorry. Interesting. No, another now we're blue skying this idea. What if it's sort of like, what if they're sort of like, they are like, fine, I'll do witness protection. Then all of a sudden they realize that. Okay, guess what? They're straight. That girl they've always had a crush on actually is into them, but they have to go away. And then they keep trying to come back to their old life. And they have to exist in these two worlds. And witness protection program, actually, they can't know that they're back in their old life. So they're hiding from the person they witnessed.
Yeah.
They're hiding from those who are the witness protection program.
Yes.
And they're caught between two worlds. And the question of the show is, what is identity?
I have to stop you. Because I feel like I can't let you sort of mar your reputation as someone who can do a masterclass on the entertainment industry and come in with this sort of crazy pitch that I couldn't follow for 2 seconds.
I was following it every step.
No, this is the show. This is the show. Shut up. This is the show. It's a gay guy and his sister, sort of Schitt's Creek. They...
Sort of Schitt's Creek?
They get Schitt's Creek, sort of other two, if you will.
Because everyone knows you can't sell a show with only a gay guy. He has to have a sister.
He has to have a straight sister.
It's actually Rule of Culture number 7. You can't sell a show with just a gay
guy.
He needs to have a
sister.
If he doesn't have a sister, like, who's going to be the whore? Who's going to be the whore?
Who's going to be the whore that doesn't have it together?
Hello? So, basically, which literally, I mean, not to drag every show, but we gotcha. Okay, this is the show. It's witness protection, and they say, we don't want it. And then the witness protection says, but you guys are under the most danger of anyone ever. And the show is, they're trying to live their gay and whore life, and the people keep trying to kill them, and they have to just get out of the way. Easy, simple, breezy. It's a gay and his whore sister, and the people are trying to kill them, and they had the opportunity to go into WPP, and there's someone probably played by... Let's just say who's hot right now that works in this gay show. Let's say
Liev Schreiber.
Liev Schreiber.
Wait,
he's hot now right now.
That reminds me quite a bit of the pitch Bowen had for this show.
I was gonna say that was the original pitch, and then Pat was blue skying.
Can I say something? That's why you need to be really careful in this entertainment industry who your creative partner is. Because let me tell you something, Bowen could have a pitch that sells, and then you have this wacko next to him who they attach for talent purposes, which is probably how you got involved, I would imagine.
Pat's the wacko?
Wait, me? No,
Pat's the wacko talent who comes in and is like,
I just had a new idea for the show, by the way. Show. Oh, wait. Fuck. I forgot the show.
Well,
now.
This isn't going to work.
No. I have an idea. Okay. Basically, the show is the following. Two people are in love. They're afraid to tell each other. It's been years. It's kind of Dawson's Creek, basically.
Okay. Mm. Wow.
They're finally, like, lifelong, finally going to commit their love. One of them has to go witness protection. The other one. Now, we're actually not telling that one story. Or maybe we are, but we're really telling the story of the other one who's trying to find the love of their life, who's in witness protection. No one will give them answers because it could endanger their life. And they have to decide, do I want to endanger the person I love? Or do I want to walk away from them forever? And that's a decision that
feels
can
like
never
a,
be made.
Feels like an essay.
Now that Pat is my creative partner, I don't want to undermine his vision, but I feel like that's not the... That's if we're focusing on the one who isn't in witness protection, that feels like the less active story.
But what if they're driving all over town? What if we see flashes of the person in witness protection in his new life? We don't know very much about it. We just know...
Oh, wait! This is kind of like this is kind of like season one of Veronica Mars. I kind of like that.
Oh yes, I love Veronica Mars. And I just rewatched it all in its entirety, and that's a part of culture that would be in the world of what I would answer for your famous question: what made you like culture?
That's not our question. First of all, can we just stop right now? That is not the fucking question. And the disrespect that you've shown, Ree, not listening to this show after it's lifted you up. No, so
I will say, when I told Angelo, my same-sex sexual / domestic partner, that I was coming on the show, I said, where I got my start. One time I did a show in Detroit with this woman who literally claimed every single place was where she got her start. Like, she was this older lesbian woman. She's like, I used to be in New York. And I go, she's like, where do you perform? I'd be like, I did a show at the Duplex that night. She goes, I go, do you know it? She goes, know it. I swear I got my start. She said every single space that I named was where she got her start.
That is so good that you met her. That's so in my vocabulary of you.
This reminds me of that other lesbian person we met at our show in Denver.
Lesbian person. Wait, I'm so mad that you guys did You guys did three? Three?
We
I don't
three.
Think so.
Boston,
me.
Chicago, and Denver.
And of course, Patrick and I famously did a shockingly good show at the Bell House together.
That's true.
Shockingly good.
You really are the third culture.
As though I've been taking a step away from the podcasting space, mm-hmm. I did receive a text message from shout out to our former family member, Meg Pope, and they did say you were mentioned in Lost Countries, and it was so sweet, and I listened, and I gotta tell you, I kept bouncing on that episode trying to find specifically the moment. And I did in fact find. I ended up listening to a large amount of the episode, and I said, thank God. I said, God works in mysterious ways. I needed this today. And then I found it, and it was so nice. And
Well, that's how we feel.
Wow. That's how we feel. We love you.
That's how we feel.
I want to circle back to P. We went on this huge tangent about this witness protection sitcom, but Pat was about to reveal the bravest thing he's ever done.
Yeah. Oh,
I said on my podcast that I wasn't crazy about Fleabag.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And I get it.
And this was in response to Bowen positing that I might love Undoing if it was set in London.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I see now that theory does not hold because you have said on the record on this very episode that you're not an Anglophile.
I'm not an Anglophile, and that's something that it took me really long to be okay with.
Can I ask you, do you find yourself, because I know you love shows that take place in New York City.
I do.
The Big Apple.
Well, you know what it's like growing up on Long Island.
I do.
You romanticize this city that you've lived in the shadow of, where there's gay people to be found, where there's sort of counterculture to be found, where there might be even people who don't care about lacrosse that you could connect with.
Yeah, of course.
And so, of course, when I see these people on my screens, I would say, interesting.
And so do you think it's interesting, like, to watch Nicole Kidman cross the street? And do you think there's symbolism in watching her cross the street that they keep showing it?
Every other shot.
First of all, before the car gets away from us, let me just say that I like the show. I think it's heavy-handed. And I think they say everything twice in it. Have you noticed?
This is where...
Is that a choice? Is that like,
I think
them
it
trying
is.
To be like, we do this thing of saying things twice?
You know, so last night, you texted us and you asked, have you gotten to the cocksucker line yet? So in the fourth episode of The Undoing, Donald Sutherland has a moment where he's explaining to Hugh Grant, spoiler alert, that he will come after him because he's a real cocksucker.
No. He's explaining to the principal of the school.
Oh, yes, that's what it is. He's like,
I'm a cocksucker. I'm a cocksucker.
And he says it like I'm a cocksucker, which is sort of,
he adds an extra vowel, cocksucker. He says cocksucker.
Cocksucker.
Yeah. What was the deal with that?
I don't know, but
I think
anyway,
Donald Sutherland just talks the way he talks, and we should all just let him.
I always think, is he British? And then like the answer is really no.
Well, but the thing is that I don't even have a problem with the delivery of the line. I think Donald did the best he could with that. It was a really strange piece of writing that I won't assign value to.
Yeah.
I won't assign a positive or negative value to it, but I did find it a strange bit of writing, the cocksucker line.
Well, you know, in a show like this, The Undoing, in a whodunit, everything matters. So I don't know if you've been listening to every word, but like, for example, when she told that story in the first episode about why Hugh Grant doesn't like dogs, that to me, there's no so in a whodunit, there's no unimportant scenes, or there's really? This is like, it's sort of everything.
I actually disagree with that theory.
No, I'm telling you, everything's gonna come back.
See, okay. I famously love whodunit. You know, I'm reading Agatha Christie in the Order of Publication, and I'm a big fan of the whodunit verse. And I think in a book like that, that's strictly whodunit. Yes, but you have to account for red herrings.
Right.
You have to account for the fact that this is a whodunit, of course, first and foremost, but it's also a drama, right? So there might be something in that space that's kind of clouding the economy of a whodunit, where nothing is wasted. The kind of using all parts of the whale, as it were.
Right. Absolutely. What do we think
of the buffalo?
I think either one works.
I think either one, either
or both of them are equally culturally sensitive,
and both deserve to have their entire selves used.
That's true.
I think that there's some significant. I think you know what's a red herring to me is Connie Chung. I was like, what is the significance?
When Connie Chung was in the show, that was a moment in culture.
Yeah, that was a little anachronistic. It was interesting. I used to love her growing up in Long Island. She would be on my commercials.
Yep.
It would be her. She would be there.
She was based on Long Island?
No, she was just...
It was like the New York...
That was
like
her heyday.
It was her heyday. Like, she was huge for news when I was young. She was huge.
Connie Chung was,
2020?
You know,
oh, my God.
But that whole thing, I was like, this would never happen. Like, Connie Chung being like, okay, so I don't know if I believe you. Convince me. And then him being like, okay.
But I'm happy it happened on the show, because that last shot of episode 4 was chilling to me. When he looked into the camera and she asked, do you have any idea who did this? And he said, yeah, I do. I felt like... Okay, so let's just ask this question of the three of us. Let's go to Bowen first. Bowen, The Undoing. Mm-hmm. Who done it?
I think a lot of attention is being placed on that kid, on their son, and I'm very interested to see. It's ultimately a story about his development, his traumatic processing of this, of seeing his parents sort of unravel. But it could be a thing where he found out about the affair and then just inhumanely sort of committed this disgusting crime.
You feel that the son, played by actor Noah Jupe.
Noah.
You
honey
think
boy,
that Noah Jupe,
fame.
Yes, who's very British, by the way.
He's so going British. To be a star.
Huge He's star.
Handsome boy and good actor.
Oh. Careful.
I'm allowed to remark on the boy's good looks.
Well, he did have like a sex scene in Honey Boy, didn't he?
Oh, I don't like that.
I know. Wait, should we cut this all out?
Like, no, we're definitely keeping it in, because it's our responsibility to make sure people know that people like you are out there. but what I want to ask you right now is, who done it on the Undoing?
That's my theory.
I literally solved the case.
You know.
P said he solved it. Okay, who did it?
I solved the case. You know who did it?
Who?
Donald Sutherland did it. And he found out about the affair. He never liked this guy. He was at that event and he left early. And he now is so desperate to have her believe that the husband did it.
Oh my God.
I really think it was Donald. And I'm really
like
good
this.
At who done.
And he threatened Hugh Grant's character in this latest episode.
Yes.
He's also like sad and anxious in a strange way. Like, did you notice in that last episode the way he was like crying, apologizing to Nicole and begging for her forgiveness? I was just like, he's really upset. There's something going on there.
And broken. Sort of, it's like, what is the narrative purpose of this character if not to have killed this woman? Do you know what I mean? Like, what else does he serve besides this sort of sense of like conflict between her family and him, which I don't think is like justification enough for how much time he gets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
sure,
totally
sure.
real. And I guess it should fall to me now to say what I think. And I'm wrestling with it. I really feel like it could go either way. I think that you both could be varying degrees of right. I think that Pat's really onto something.
Wow.
But I also think there might be something to the fact that Nicole
There's
did
no
it.
There's no spectrum of truth. Oh, okay. You think Nicole did it?
I think that it's possible Nicole did it. Because I think it's kind of interesting.
I'm so sick of that type of thing. Where we realize the star the whole time had done it. Like,
right.
Haven't we seen enough for that?
Yeah.
I just, no matter what the outcome is, I feel like I've seen every version of it. Do you know right. what I mean? That's totally. My issue with the show.
There's a version of it that I'm into, which is like Jodie Foster and Flight Plan, where it's like they accuse, like there's a whole like, the half of Act 2 is them accusing her of losing the daughter. I love that movie.
I never saw that movie, but should I watch it? I just
yes. Kind of... Oh my god, you would love it.
I'm please. Sure you would love it. Isn't it Jodie Foster and
Peter Skarsgård, and then Sean Bean is in it too.
Oh, I love Sean Bean. Let's take a break. And we're back. And here's the thing. I want to just kind of hard cut, because one of the reasons I was so excited to have Patrick on today was because we have so much Housewives stuff to talk about, and I really need the Housewives authority. And then at the end of the episode, we'll kind of have his special guest correspondent, Grey's Anatomy correspondent, weigh in. But mm-hmm. I need to know what my girls thought of the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City premiere.
I thought it was great. I think we're really being set up, I think. I'm cautiously very optimistic.
Me too.
I think so. I saw a snippet of the Watch What Happens Live where they were all on.
I didn't like that.
It was chaotic.
That felt a little like choreographed. I mean, all of it is, but yeah, I can't tell yet.
After episode one of season one, I don't want to see what kind of terms they're all on now. Like, let that play out before me. Spoiler alert. Don't be a Bowen, Andy Cohen.
Oh! Yeah. Primer.
I do think like... Like, it was funny to watch them all have their first, like, appearance on Watch What Happens Live be all together and on a Zoom, because it just felt, like, jumpy and, like, they were all trying to get their moment. You can tell who, like, the fucking hogs are from the first episode.
Who's
and
the
from,
hogs?
I mean,
who's the hogs?
The hogs. I mean, Jen is
Jen,
very
Lisa,
much...
Mary.
Jen, Mary, and Lisa, and Heather.
I'm still in a place with Salt Lake City, where I need to know, their names aren't enough for me to know who they are.
So here's
Mary,
the way I can
I
run
know,
it down.
And Meredith, I know. Mary and Meredith, I know.
Mary is the is the first lady of the Pentecostal church who married her step grandfather.
Yeah.
We famously have Jen, who's the first Muslim housewife ever. She is married to a football coach, and she used to be Mormon, and now she is Muslim.
Is that the BYU? No, it's the Utah State.
Yes. He's a coach at Utah State.
It's like crazy how much money college football coaches make.
Well, yeah, they're certainly loaded. But I think she also has her own business. And then there's Lisa Barlow, who I found out is actually the centerpiece from which they built out the cast. It was Lisa.
Oh, interesting.
Because this originally was supposed to be about businesswomen in Utah, and they were not...
It was never not going to be about Mormons.
It was not supposed to be a Housewives franchise, and then they saw what they had, and they were like, this is a Housewives franchise.
See, I never understood, as someone who wasn't an Anglophile, I never understood why they didn't do that with one of my favorite
Ladies of London
shows, Ladies of London.
Yeah.
But anyways,
Lisa Barlow is like Miss Sundance, apparently, and she owns tequila brands. And she is an active Mormon, but she converted because she's culturally Jewish. Then, speaking of Jewish, there's Meredith, who has her gay son, which is iconic to have the first gay son on a Housewives franchise.
I'm trying to remember, there was one situation where someone got outed by one of the other wives, a son? A friend of the family. Early in Housewives, I think, I want to say it was in Jersey.
I think it was
in Jersey. Someone said someone was gay and they didn't want it. And I cannot
feels like
remember.
your son is gay would be a thing, a slurry thing someone would say on the Real Housewives of Jersey.
It wasn't done out of malice. It was more done out, I think they were, it was like an ally of the, not of the gay community, of the other housewife who was attached to the gay son. And I think it was just sort of like, I don't know. Somehow it came out that it wasn't like your son's gay. It was more like referring to him as a gay son.
For a gay son to one day be attached to a housewife is huge.
I mean, it's a huge moment in history.
Just to put it in Pat's terminology just now, the housewife attached to the gay son,
not the gay son's mother, the housewife attached to the gay son.
To the gay son.
So we see them sort of go on a hike. I was watching it with Jared, and 30, I kid you not, 15 seconds into them being on screen, he goes, "They're Jewish." He knew they were Jewish immediately.
Wow.
And then what else we have? We have Whitney, who we saw getting her vows renewed, and we find out that she was excommunicated from the Mormon church. Well, that's controversial now. She says she just left. For having an affair with a married man while she was married that she worked with, and now she's sort of being reaccepted into it in a way. And finally, we have Heather, who is sort of has a complicated relationship with the Mormon church, being that she's divorced from one of the richest Mormons in the world, I guess.
Yes. Heather's off of the bat seems the least interesting to me, I think.
Heather feels like Roni Heather. There's so many similarities.
Yeah, and I do love that the other one refuses. I love a storyline where one refuses to admit that she knew the other one before. Like, that's always
iconic.
Really fun.
There was two iconic things that happened, I felt. I don't know her, despite the fact that you definitely do, and you smell like hospital.
You smell like hospital, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's because especially knowing the cast was built out from Lisa, like, she must have told producers she knew this woman.
Literally, now, there is an interview where she's like, well, the first person I went to was Heather. And so it's like, okay, so you did know who she was.
And I love the terminology of good time girl, where it was like, I would have loved to be
a good time girl.
I wish that I was good time girl.
It's my dream to go back to a real school and be a good time girl. And I would have loved to show people my vagina.
That was dark.
Yeah.
That it's her dream to go back to college.
But relatable.
but relatable in many ways. Okay, so I want to say right off the bat that out of the six of them, I already know the one I identify with. And it is Lisa.
I know the one I identify with.
It is Lisa because she went to three different fast food restaurants with her kids and husband. And
that felt like a performance to me.
Well,
I believe that they don't cook. I believe that they don't cook.
Yeah, it just felt too hammed up in a way that was like, I just felt it was very like, first day of filming, I'm going to show them the kind of mom I am. And not exactly one who cooks. I'm the one who goes to, like, I don't know.
Fuck her drag. I guess she didn't do a good enough job. Pat, you're so fucking rude. How come when I say I identify with one, you attack?
I never do that. Ever,
you did
ever.
That. You
I
did
never
that.
Did ever. Though we did get into a scuffle on Twitter over Denise, didn't we?
I wasn't considering it a scuffle. I was considering it a back and forth with a friend.
I was considering it a good natured intellectual scuffle.
Because
good time scuffle.
You are
a good
team,
time scuffle.
You are, but I think we're on the same side. We're both team Denise.
I am team Denise. You know, it's I'm not always on a team. Sometimes it's more like. And sometimes I don't align with everyone on the same team where I'll pick and choose. Like, I like you from that side, you from that side.
Yeah.
We were arguing about Erica. Because Erica's. You said this is the first season you like Erica Jane. And I said, yes. I've always liked Erica Jane until this season.
Yes. And that was what we scuffed about.
I relate to Pat's view on Erica, which is the aggressive pandering to the gays.
Yes.
Which was your kind of like reasoning behind your sort of distaste for her, right?
Yes. Yeah. And yes. Anyways, I don't mean to get off track.
No, but Bo and Yang, first you, who do you identify with on The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Utah?
I guess I'm either a Jen or a Meredith. Jen in the way that like we like sort of ostentatious things every now and then. Or Meredith in terms of me just being, but I guess you can't be either because Jen and Meredith were sort of pitted against each other in this episode in a way where it was Meredith's party, but Jen made it about herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know that I would do that on Jen's part.
No, I don't
Maybe
see you as
Meredith?
A Jen. I don't see you as a Jen. Can I be honest?
Oh no, Mary?
No, I don't think you're Mary. I
Who
think
am
you,
I?
You might be.
You, careful.
I don't,
this is scary.
I don't
this
think you're scary. Heather. I don't think you're Heather, but...
I should hope not.
I think I'm a Meredith.
You think you're Meredith? The only reason why I don't want you to necessarily be a Meredith is because, and I don't wish that for you, is because out of the six of them, Meredith is the only one I thought, maybe boring.
Oh, no. See, I'm a Meredith as well.
I like Meredith.
I'm a Meredith as well, but that makes sense because me and Bowen are both Scorpios. And so if you're a Scorpio and you're a Meredith, I'm doing a study. So please DM me. And if you're willing to do a trial where you live in a lab for 9 weeks as a Scorpio who's a Meredith, then please DM me.
Maybe you are Meredith,
though. You have to live in the lab?
Because
I think Meredith, he and I are both Meredith.
Meredith and Lisa are best friends. And if I'm saying I identify as a Lisa, that makes sense for me re both of you.
So I'm trying to figure out, like, there was something early on that made me go, I love Meredith, and I can't remember.
Someone said this, I think. I don't know if it was UP or if it was someone else, but the fact that Meredith is not, like, pointing out, like, emphasizing the fact that her son is gay.
Yes, she just tastefully has a gay son.
Has not made a big deal out of it. Yes. I respect that.
She's just tastefully the housewife attached to the gay son.
Yeah. But wait, can I ask you guys a question? Her husband, Seth, screams second family to me.
Oh.
Ooh.
There is always one. I could certainly see it being him.
It's weird to think that we're getting to know these women, and it will, capital W, get to a place where we are seeing life-shattering, world-altering drama befall them.
I feel like I know who's not going to make it back season two.
Whitney,
yeah. She's too disconnected, and she's certainly done interesting things. She's made interesting choices, but she herself doesn't strike me as interesting. I'm not desperate to know what she's about to say.
Sure.
Her main storyline was off screen. Her cousin was like, "I'm happy for you for renewing your vows." That was like her main.
Well, we saw that scene sort of from the shoulder down.
From the shoulder down, they were. Oh wait, Pat, did you go with us to see Sunset Boulevard on Broadway?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I saw on Island. Once on this island with you.
Yes.
Yes. And then Pat and I went to go see Slave Play on opening night. Pat isn't, for all of Pat's aversion to theater, I reject that notion, and I think Pat actually loves.
Well, but he said one of my favorite things that I've ever heard leaving a theater, which was as we were leaving Once on This Island, which Bowen and I loved. I really loved the new production of Once on This Island. We were leaving, and I said, "Pat, what did you think?" And he goes, "I didn't like it. She was mentally ill. She needed help."
The main characteress of that film. The main characteress of that film.
That film.
I think struggled. I think there was decision making in her that I didn't understand, and I thought she needed someone to talk to. But also,
do you feel that way about Ariel and the Little Mermaid? Because they're very similar stories.
Almost every female character is mentally ill if you really track it down before 2005.
Well, I think that anyone who is like immediately like I've met you and now there was something in that play where I was like. There was some moment where I was like, this is
well, she
good.
Sees him immediately and she sings about the stranger in white the rest of the show.
I remember thinking, how does she even recognize him? They didn't even meet or something like that. I remember thinking she should go move on with her life instead of instead of being obsessed with this guy.
But sure.
I don't remember the play quite well enough to really.
Yeah.
Really
I think maybe what upset you is when she gets thrown out of the kingdom and she sits outside the gate for 3 weeks and ultimately starves to death.
Yeah. I was like, girl.
She turns into a tree is really what happens.
That was, I didn't like that. And that didn't happen. And that didn't happen in Little Mermaid.
Bowen is, with Sunset Boulevard, Bowen is referencing when Bowen and I went for my birthday and...
We were in the nose, the
we
last
were in,
row.
We were in the literal, like, truly one of the last
second
rows of the
mezzanine.
Theater to see Glenn Close in Sunset Boulevard. And she comes out and makes her amazing first entrance. And all we could see was her little feet. And people were flipping out.
Because she was on the top tier of this, like, and people were flipping out at Glenn Close. And
we were screaming.
We were just laughing.
Yeah, it sucks. Speaking of this... You know, I saw the new, just before quarantine, I saw on opening night, I hate to call myself this sort of theater metropolitan man who lives in New York, who is gay.
What did you see, bitch?
I saw the new West Side Story.
With Isaac Cole Powell.
Yes, I saw it the day before lockdown.
Oh, I saw it like a few days before lockdown. So I guess a little bit before you, I guess. And then you must have seen that I saw it and then you saw it soon after.
I did.
You probably influenced Bowen's decision. You're an influencer. But you guys both know that Isaac Cole Powell, who is the lead, Tony in West Side Story, was the lead in Once on This Island that we saw.
And I will say that I was attracted to him in both of those roles.
Very attractive sexually.
And secondly, I was second row of that, which I felt like, oh my God, they gave us, it was this great seat. And it was one of these events that we went to, it was like an opening. And so we went, we didn't know what seat. And for one, we could not find the young woman who was going to give us our tickets, who was a very sweet girl. And we were trying to get her attention. And then we turned around and literally in our face, truly breathing on us as we were like looking, was Vanessa Hudgens. Like, that's insane.
Wait, you and your same-sex partner, Angelo?
Yes.
Days before COVID.
I would say Angelo might have touched her nose with the side of his head. And anyways, they put us in the second row and we were like, oh my God, this is so
shocking.
They gave us good seats. But so much of it happens like in
on the screen
that we truly couldn't see the play. We truly couldn't see the play.
It's actually a rule of culture. Sometimes very close seats are not the best seats. That's rule of culture number 55. Sometimes very close,
close seats
are not the best seats.
I want to get us back on track. Well, should we quickly check in on Potomac?
Yeah, so let's just chat. Boa, what did you feel about this last episode of Potomac?
I really loved Wendy at the beginning of the season. Now I'm just like, you got this exceptionalism narrative has got to stop. This I honor the fact that she is so educated.
We all do.
But the way that she sort of doesn't weaponize it, but like, I mean, just kind of lets it frame every single conflict on that show is a little, it's a lot. And it's like, you gotta ditch the exceptionalism narrative. This just applies for anybody. Mm-hmm. We are not, none of us are even that special. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. I only have a bachelor's degree and I feel comfortable saying that.
Me too.
I
have a bachelor of fine arts.
Wow.
I have a BFA.
Don't tell people that.
I'm humiliated. I won't ever again.
Seriously, don't say that.
I'm waving my arms in the air, which is my signal to my producers to cut that.
I think I really also identify with Bowen Yang and what he's saying, because I really loved Wendy so much. And I still do. Like, I am a very forgiving person where if I like you, you really can do kind of stupid shit for a little while and then I'll still like you. Like, I still love Kenya more. I still love Bethany. I still have love for...
Rinna.
Teresa. Oh. I don't have love for Rinna. Well,
that's so stupid. That's really disrespectful to say.
And I call it, they all have varying levels of, I call it immunity. And I said this on the thread, but like for me, Robin is someone who has immunity. Where do I always agree with her? It's like, should she have included Karen in her website? Absolutely.
Yeah. No, that was insane. And also the pictures weren't even bad of Karen.
That bad?
When she said these pictures are not usable and they showed like these kind of stunning pictures of Karen, I was like, bitch. And then when she said in her confessional that she remembers years ago when Karen said she didn't like Ray's dick.
Oh, yes.
Robin was doing a lot on this episode. We do stand.
Robin is being messy, but she's someone who it's like, okay, you shouldn't be doing this, but I still like you. Monique is someone who's in that category where it's like, I can be firmly on your side while acknowledging that you've been, like, in Monique versus Candace, I am on Monique's side while knowing that she is very much in the wrong in that situation.
I'm finding that I agree with Pat Regan.
Wow.
In all things, yeah.
Wow.
I think I agree with Patrick and Bowen, because I am also rooting for Monique.
Oh, my God.
I am also rooting for Monique, and knowing that what she did was wrong, I can't get on Team Candace. I can't.
No, I've always struggled with Candace from an early age, and I think that... we've all spoken about Karen having this sort of redemption story.
Oh, we love it.
And I'm also experiencing that to a lesser degree, but... Nonetheless, I'm experiencing it with Ashley, who I really didn't like for a long time. And now,
she's kind of had a big husband episode.
She's going to get some shit, I think, for the next episode. I think on Twitter, people won't be happy with her.
But because she's, like, going against Candace, like, what is... It's, like, I want to decentralize Candace from this narrative. I've said the word decentralized a lot this episode.
But sometimes you have to, and sometimes an episode calls for that.
Yes. Thank you. But I feel like, the whole atmosphere of the episodes lately has been make sure we don't piss off Candace.
Yeah. No, I know. I think that, I loved Karen's impression of Wendy walking down the stairs, by the way.
So funny.
And, I know. I think that, but I think actually it feels like, why are you, what is insane is for Monique to be suing Candace is crazy, right?
Mm-hmm. It's, yes.
And so for Ashley to be lending support to that moment, for someone to like truly beat the shit out of you and then be like, I'm actually suing you because I beat the shit out of you, it's crazy. And so for Ashley to be like, she deserves, like for her to write this thing being like, she's definitely not cool, judge, like is kind of like, Ashley, like, don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that Candace needs to be sued over this. You know what I mean?
Well, okay. So in my experience, sharing a space digitally, virtually with Monique Samuels, she's countersuing with this like sort of testimony that Candace was the aggressor and she kind of actually even landed the first blow, which which from the footage we've seen is not true. But then Monique kept saying to Andy, like, I'm bringing receipts to the reunion. We shot this episode like before, and then they just finished the reunion, and they say it might be four parts.
Yeah,
yes, I saw that.
And so Monique's whole thing is like bring in actual undoctored footage, quote unquote, that Candace was the first person to like start the fight.
But so she's not even saying that on the show, though. She's talking about this wine glass. Even if Candace, there was definitely a long period of time where Hera could have been let go of. You know what I mean?
Monique was attacking her viciously.
Ran back to her. Yes.
Yeah.
This being said, I am on Team Monique, but I think Karen's handling it with much aplomb.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask one more Housewives question before we bring the correspondent part of you in, which is, what are your thoughts on Kathy Hilton joining the Beverly Hills Housewives? Is this just another way for them to pad Team Kyle, or do you think it'll get interesting?
So Kyle's someone is another one that I forgive kind of easily, and that's why me and Rinna have a strange relationship,
right?
Because Rinna, something about her just drives me crazy. Like when she said, "You're so angry." She could have been talking to me. She could have been talking to me in that moment. And
yeah, and she knows that, and that's why she is winning in that moment.
You are, Pat.
So, and Kathy, I think, is what the fans have wanted for a long time. We want to see all three. Which, by the way, did you guys watch the Paris Hilton doc?
Yes.
I have not.
A big part of the Paris Hilton doc is that she has like 18 laptops, and when asked why, she's like, every time I break up with a guy, I have to get a new laptop because they might break into my old laptop. The logic doesn't make any sense at all, and it's like, okay, cool. But
I think that documentary is the reason why Kathy is finally doing the show, because I think that her reputation took a huge hit after that documentary came out, because, yeah.
You know, Angelo always says he wants Chris, and I do.
We don't need Chris.
I don't think she'll ever do it.
No,
I think she might. I mean, she's done with E. You know,
she will never do something that she cannot produce. There's no way.
She doesn't have control over. That's true.
She's never going to allow her image to be manipulated by someone else. Now that she's made probably close to $1 billion doing that herself.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. Anyways, I think Kathy's good. I know Kathy has problems with Rinna. I've seen that's going on. They're already feuding on social media. So
I think it's Rinna's comeuppance this season.
Yeah, it's time for Rinna to have a bit of a fall, I think.
And Garcelle, I think this is what I think. I think Kyle, who's been photographed shooting with Garcelle, is recruiting Garcelle, because I think Kyle sees an opportunity to like bring Garcelle in, because Garcelle has a bad taste in her mouth re-Rinna from last season. So I think that Garcelle will get kind of persuaded to join Team Richards, which includes Kathy.
Often and that does happen when two. I feel like when two people are such foes one season, they end up being allies, because it's like we saw that with We saw that with Teddy and Dorit last season of Beverly Hills.
Erica and Dorit.
Erica and Dorit. And we were seeing that with Monique and Ashley. And so whatever. But the other thing is, one more thing I have to say about Housewives, what I've noticed in me pause for dramatic
effect. This is huge. This is so beautiful.
What I've noticed, I mean, is for some reason I'm so drawn to the betas. Like, I love these housewives that are like kind of the underlings of an alpha. And so, like, my favorite housewives across the board are Robin, Dolores from Jersey, Stephanie from Dallas.
Stephanie from Dallas is one of the queens. She's one of my core. She's in my all-star cast.
I loved Carol was huge for me. Mm-hmm. And
Bowen's a Carol.
I'm a beta, I guess. Yeah.
No. But
no, I celebrate. I love no.
Carol falls into that. You guys can be Carol and Heather if you want for Halloween.
You're saying that I should be Heather for Halloween?
I see you two as Carol and Heather for Halloween.
Okay. We might be that.
And Matt kind of looks
for
like
next year.
And I'm Bethany. And and that though the, I think
and I'm the, Bethany should be title of EP. No, honestly, so, that should be title of EP. And I'm Bethany.
And I do think that
that's
logically, my favorite on Atlanta should be Cynthia. I feel like, but it for some reason in Atlanta the pattern is broken, and my favorites on Atlanta are Portia and Kenya, who are
Portia's,
both very much.
Portia
alphas.
Is the number yes. one,
and so is yeah. I mean, Portia is incredible. She should have like a huge career in Scripted. I'm gonna go as far as to say this. God. Portia should have a huge career in Scripted.
See, Portia, I think, is an alpha who needs to be taken care of. And I feel like I think that's very Pat.
Yeah, maybe I look for the ones who need taken care of. Maybe that's how I feel.
I have a different take on Portia, which is that she's a beta who rose very quickly to alpha and too fast to where it was messy. But now mm-hmm. she's settled into her alpha status and it's enjoyable. But she had a rocky road.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, she literally Monique'd Kenya. Mm. She literally dragged her.
I loved when they were like getting along. You know, I saw Joel. I was went to sit in the audience of Joel's
yes,
What Happened Live
right. with
and
Kenya.
He was on with Kenya, and I just remember that was after the premiere of Atlanta, so we hadn't seen it yet. And Kenya was saying how her and Portia are in this great place, and I loved to hear it. But now it seems like they're kind of not anymore.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know if they'll ever be besties.
I hope I'm being interesting because I don't feel like I'm being funny.
Well, that's okay because you say
every
that.
Time you come on.
3 hours of sleep I got last night.
Why?
Why?
I don't even understand why. Basically, we got in a crazy sleep schedule that somehow resulted in 2 nights ago me sleeping from 4 a.m. to 1 p.m. and then napping from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. So this is crazy. So then I could not fall asleep until almost 7 a.m. and then I woke up at 10 a.m.
That's shocking.
What was it? But what brought on the sleep schedule? Like the first domino falling?
It was the first domino that did fall was just quarantine, and it yeah. happened 8 months ago. And now it's really learned behavior. It's the first domino fell 8 months ago.
Right.
And
that's crazy.
Every day since then has been another domino.
What a sick kind of torturous time for the dominoes to keep falling.
I know.
So hard. Wait, can I actually confront you about something?
Oh, of course. That's why I came on the show.
I feel that this is something very sensitive to me.
Oh my God.
I got really into Survivor, and I would often try to like engage with you about it, and I felt that you shut me down repeatedly.
What? I did not.
I used it. And you're laughing and smiling, and you know it's true. And no, I feel I... that can I say what I feel? I feel yes. that you thought I was trying to like take Survivor being your thing, and that was not the case, Pat.
I hear you. First of all, I don't feel Survivor is my thing, even. Pause for gravitas. I think that
it's Chris Kelly's thing.
It's Chris Kelly's thing. It's ultimately Survivor's Aaron Jackson's thing.
That's true. That's right. It's Aaron
I think
Jackson's
that
thing.
What was poking at insecurity. Okay, and now I'm getting vulnerable. Now I'm being Karen after she's had a couple.
Yeah.
Is
saying
that,
you have like your clitoris
beautiful
is a certain
clitoris.
Color. Yeah.
You two, I think, are both very enthusiastic about the culture that you love. And that's what the universal we, love about you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Survivor is something that has always felt niche to me in this New York gay world.
I see. It
suddenly felt like, and Parvati was someone who was really special to me and important to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Developmentally.
And yeah, even more. Yeah. She is the reason that I came out. And I think that, so I just think I was like, you know how we all feel. But you could draw the same comparison of, I'm someone who got very into Drag Race very late in the game. So it's the same comparisons could be drawn.
Could they?
I'm here to say they can. I absolutely feel, because in some way I was like, wait, after, and I feel this way about Matt a lot of times, where I'm like, I've told you about this thing for years.
Yes.
And now you're on board, and now you're fully, like,
totally
kind of blossoming in this space that is untethered from, like, my, like, pushing this on you for years and years and years.
Totally. Like, I acknowledge about Drag Race is that it is insane that I, like, truly for decades, I'm aging myself with how long I haven't watched Drag Race. And I don't know what clicked. I just, you know what happened is I made it through, because I remember watching the season 7 premiere at Bowen's apartment back in the day and not connecting and not getting it.
Yeah.
And then one time at Lulu Krause's.
Oh, Matt, you love Matt, Lulu.
Me and Matt and Henry watched a different season premiere, an old one that I don't remember which one, and I couldn't connect. And then I tried to watch season 4 by myself one time, and it was like the zombie thing, and I was like, this is so long, and I couldn't.
It was not the right time and place. The chips have fallen in the right way now, where you can enjoy it now in 2020, decades after everyone else.
And I was watching with Anne. He was able to contextualize. I could ask things like, what were people saying at the time? You know what I mean? Sometimes you just need that kind of someone to tell you what people were saying at the time, because you obviously are watching. It's like, how did people feel about Sharon? I need to have that conversation. I need someone to represent the
and
other.
So I guess for me, what I'm saying, which is the reason why I brought this up, is that I, in literally almost exact same as you're saying, was sort of looking to engage with you, my close friend, about it, and I felt that you know, would sort of one word answer, or even worse, LOL me sometimes when I wanted to say, like, wow, Ken from Millennials Gen X is so hot or whatever.
Yes.
And so, well, like, you know, that's, I guess that's all I'm saying, is I was hurt by it. Okay. And and the ball is in your court.
Okay, so I'm going to take the ball, dribble it a couple of times, and start driving towards the hoop by saying that
I really saw it as a tennis ball. I just want to say.
Oh, I think that...
Because the ball is in your court?
I think the expression is basketball.
No.
Yeah, I've always thought basketball.
I'll check in with the panel.
Oh, no.
They say they're upset. They can't agree. One of them says basketball, one of them says tennis.
Who's saying what?
Megan is sort of very loudly saying it's basketball, and Abby is sort of very quietly saying she thinks it's tennis. And unfortunately,
so I guess that's three votes for basketball. That's still three votes for basketball, two votes for tennis.
Okay, so it's basketball. All right. Anyway, what are you going to do with the ball?
No, I acknowledge that. I understand why you felt that. I think there was discomfort, but I do think, and I'll say, and I'm not saying this is your fault, but this is where it's coming from. It was very much like a very public.
I get this.
And I think, because to me it's different in this way. Like, Drag Race is something that in our little circle is very celebrated, and everyone watches them. So it's,
but
like,
not Survivor.
For me to like Drag Race doesn't feel like I'm claiming it. And then because Survivor was something that's been so, I could only talk to a couple people about for all these years. I'm sorry if I start crying. But it was,
you thought, like, who does this bitch think he is?
That all of a sudden now it's public, like, so publicly and so enthusiastically, like,
a thing for me.
Like, for something of that poked at something in me.
Okay.
And that happens. We're all human beings.
Pat, I want to, first of all, Matt, I want to say that I share in this sort of, confoundedness around Pat's sort of disinterested engagement.
I can't say I understand still to this moment. Oh, but that's God. Okay.
Well, hold on. And then I want to say, Pat, thank you so much for so cogently, like, putting that into words. And, like, I gotta say, I understand this completely from Pat's point of view.
And of course, completely. Jealousy too. You have to understand this is the time when I, you know, whatever. You guys had this huge platform. You're getting to talk to heroes of mine. Of course there's
jealousy.
Do you
want to talk? Can I tell you something? There was a part of me that was like, we should bring Pat into the Parvati episode, and that would have been such a moment. But then when all my texts were sort of going unresponded to...
And that's a lesson.
Oh, my
and
God.
And that's a lesson.
Yeah. No,
yes, that was image. I understand that was immature, but I'm messy and I'm imperfect and I'm...
What housewife does this make you?
Oh gosh, it makes me a little bit. I think I could see Bethany doing this. This is a little bit Bethany Sonia season 8 Cheater Brand Tipsy Girl Vodka Tipsy Girl Tequila.
Oh yeah, I got you. I got
this.
You.
This is a little bit of that. This is me screaming at. This is me screaming at you, sending you down to my elevator, you sobbing.
Because I called my thing Tipsy Girl.
Because you called your thing Tipsy Girl, but I am not expressing that I think I was correct. I'm just saying that was probably where it was coming from.
That's kind of an iconic way to say sorry. I am not expressing that I think I was correct.
But see, as a fellow Scorpio who could be a Meredith, I get this.
Thank you. And that's when it's so helpful to have another Scorpio who could be Meredith like around, just to kind of co-sign and say, girl, you're not crazy. That's just what it is to be a Scorpio who could be a Meredith. And
and as me, a Pisces who just wants to love, you know what I mean? Like, it's so, sometimes I just love too hard.
I will say this about Matt Rogers. I do think you're very good at coming from a place of abundance and not feeling so much jealous. Like, you never seem jealous or bitter, which is, I think, a skill that I have not mastered. You always seem interested in, like, you never seem territorial. You always seem like you want to lift the tides, which I
do want to.
I don't. For me, I struggle with that. For me, I let fear come in, and I say, "You have some. I don't have as much." You know what I mean?
But Pat, what you should know, and I'm gonna throw a superlative out there. Mm-hmm. But what Pat should know is that, irrespective of that jealous instinct, I think anyone would want to hear what you have to say about anything.
Yes. Oh my god!
Which is why I reached out. Which is why.
Yes, and I understand.
And that's where this is coming from. We're like, I want to know what Pat thinks of this.
I know. I don't know what it was. I know what you guys
you
are
don't,
saying.
You, babe, you don't have to explain it any further.
I think you've explained it.
I wish I could build a machine and go back in time. But I can't build a machine. And
as Camille Grammer once said, and now we said it.
And I if I could build a machine, I would. But I can't build a machine. And if I could, I wouldn't want to. Because life is beautiful as it happens. Mm-hmm. And the book is being written every second.
Preach, sister. Now, before we move on to I Don't Think So, Honey, we say that. I need to know, you as our Grey's Anatomy Lost Culture Resource correspondent, what is going on? We know that some shit went down.
Yes. Wait. So I'm actually a bad correspondent, and I'm bad at my full time job, which I do get paid $250,000 a year for. I'm on salary at Lost Culture Resources. I get $250,000 a year to correspond on Grey's.
Money we have.
And I haven't really finished the premiere yet, and I go through this with Grey's. Shout out to one of the funniest people I've met recently, Ariel Cartland. If she's listening, I'm not sure if she'll listen.
Shout out to Ariel.
She's very funny.
You guys know Ariel Cartland?
Yes,
she's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And she
fabulous.
Told me, she's also current on Grey's, and she is the one who told me this, but on Grey's Twitter, there was talk of, and spoiler alert, if you don't want even loose spoilers, shut your ears now. And Bowen, that's how you do it. And there's a list of characters that do have IMDb credits this season that are mind-blowing. These characters include Izzy Stevens, George O'Malley, Adele. And by the way, when Ariel sent me this list, I thought I was thinking of Adele the singer, and I was like, wow,
no,
amazing.
But it's Loretta Devine.
It's Loretta Devine, but I was like, wow. And I was like, wow, an amazing stunt casting.
and Adele would be a great patient on Grey's.
I could see Grey's.
I feel like my head hurts.
I could see Adele coming in as like herself, essentially, like as a big singer in the world, and like Meredith has to perform like throat surgery on her. You know what I mean? Can't 100%. You see that?
I feel like I can see that.
They've done that for sure. They've definitely done that.
She would say, "I need my throat, dude."
I think that they did an episode where I think it was Derek, it might have been his sister, had to do a brain surgery on someone who loved to play guitar, and the person didn't want him to clip out the piece of his brain that played guitar, so Derek had him be awake and playing guitar the whole time he was operating on his brain.
They're
so
iconic and ridiculous.
So he would know what not to cut out.
It is a stock narrative where it's like a performer comes in that the surgeon might, like Burke operated on a sax player or a trumpet player that he loved. She had to operate on yeah.
It's a trope within Grey's of this, like, a very interesting way of raising the stakes, I would say, of surgery. Definitely. Which already some would say have high stakes.
Very high stakes.
I think Grey's needs to stop with the exceptionalism. Because guess what? If someone isn't a world-class saxophone player, their hands still matter.
Absolutely. All hands matter. All hands say matter.
That. Stop. Say that. Wait, okay, so we've Izzy, George, Adele.
Callie. Arizona.
I've heard Christina.
Christina was the other huge one.
Wow. So
basically what the fear is, right, that they're going to try to do Zoom hangouts or something, that they're going to, it's going to be Zoom from Christina.
That's certainly my fear.
The other fear
they did that with Christina, though, where she was already in another hospital and her and Meredith were FaceTiming all the time.
Yes, they've done that. And they also did a thing where Christina was in a cold city with the actor who played Mr. Feeny on Boy Meets World. And she only could talk to Meredith on the phone for a few episodes.
Yes, that's right.
That was before she finally left. So it's interesting. I mean, I think that what the question is, are they saying these are the end times? Like, is Grey's ending? Oh, and Catherine. Oh, yeah. We already talked about Catherine. Yeah. Hill coming back.
Yeah.
Because I've always
felt
that Grey's...
would be huge.
Well, I've always felt like Grey's is sexist. Because if we're going to bring back Derek, who is bad on set. If we're going to bring back Isaiah, who is bad on set and said fag. Like, could we have to then bring back Izzy, unfortunately, who ultimately had an annoying mom.
And never said fag.
I never said that to anyone.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think I would love to see Katherine Heigl as Izzy back playing her iconic character. I mean, that is how we all fell in love with her. And many of us are still in love with Katherine Heigl, and we wish the best for her.
I just would love, yes, we wish that we ultimately, whatever she was going through during that time in her life, we wish the best for her.
Some of us have like bitchy years. You know what I mean? Like, I think my bitchy years were like my like early 20s. I think were my like bitchy years.
Right, and my bitchy years were definitely my mid to late. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, you weren't being a bitch, really. I just thought you and I. You know what? You probably were being a bitch to people. You weren't being a bitch to me.
I wasn't being a bitch to you, but I definitely was being a bitch to people.
Y'all, we are transitioning into I Don't Think So, Honey. This is the segment, which is a 60-second segment, where we take something and, you know, rail against it in pop culture, and we sort of go hashtag off, as they say, and it makes up a segment called I Don't Think So, Honey. So I am ready with my I Don't Thinks.
Okay, so this is Matt Rogers, and he has his I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, Candace Owens, and all the... fucking fools saying that Harry Styles is not representing masculinity when he wears a goddamn gown. And which, let me just say, by the way, he looks stunning. And let me just list a few people who have done androgyny in the past. Do your fucking homework. How about Miss Prince? How about Miss David Bowie, bitch? How about Adam Lambert? How about all these people, God, regardless of their sexual orientations, who have dressed gender bend? This is a part of not only pop culture and pop music, but rock music. It says fuck you to anything. So I don't think so, honey, Candace Owens, and I don't think so, honey, Ben Shapiro, as if we should care what either of you have to say. By the way, I don't think so, honey, Ben Shapiro, who like bragged last year about not being able to get his wife wet, and now you're going to be the authority on what's fucking masculine. Get the fuck out of here. And also, I don't think so, honey, Candy Cohen, stop conflating socialism in quotes with the downfall of masculinity. Shut up. You are so stupid.
And that's 1 minute. Her name is now, henceforth, Candy Cohen. No longer Candace Owens.
Candy Cohen.
Did I call her Candy Cohen?
At the end.
Let me tell you something. Candy Cohen.
I remember because I heard Candy and I randomly thought you were changing yours and doing Candy Burris, like, all of a sudden.
No, but I have done, I literally have done I Don't Think So, Honey, Candy Burris in the past.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah, because I didn't think she should have had another kid when her daughters were like, please don't.
But
it's also none of my fucking business. I couldn't stand all this stuff, the controversy about like Harry Styles looking stunning, like wearing whatever the fuck he wants. And you know who doesn't give a fuck about this? Harry Styles. So no one's gonna bother him.
He's so unaffected by this. But that's the thing too, it's like, wait, this is not a new conversation, and it's just like, I don't know, like maybe just to connect the theme to Potomac, it's just sort of ripping the sutures of old wounds, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, I think this is a prophecy being fulfilled. I think this is the third of a trilogy of the dress scandals. I think we had Monica Lewinsky. I think we had the what color is it dress.
The dress.
And I think now we have our third dress scandal. And I think I think there's a narrative thread there. And I think this randomly is a satisfying ending of it.
I agree.
It feels like there's finally... it feels like there was so much moral ambiguity in the what color is a dress, right? That was the theme. It was like, who's right, who's wrong, moral relativism. And now...
A nation divided.
And then in Monica, it felt like there wasn't moral relative. It felt like it was very moral, but like on the wrong side. Like we all burned this woman down at the stake, and then everyone was wrong, and she was on the right side of that dress scandal. And now this dress scandal, we're finally all coming together and saying, no, Candace Burris.
No, so she's no she's Burris. I literally forgot. It's actually great Candy that we forgot Cohen. Her name. So I thought she started as Candace Owens. She became Candy Cohen, and then now she's Candace Burris. So I sort of love like taking her own name away from her because she's a damn fool.
That's a new trilogy that's very satisfying in its conclusion.
Hugely satisfying.
I've known for years there would be another dress thing. By the way.
I knew you knew. Very Nostradamus, like very Nostradamus vibes
in that way.
And honestly, that's why Pat is able to say something, and I'm Bethany. Period. And just get away with it. Period. And we have to trust. Okay, so Bowen Yang, it's time for your I don't think so, honey. Do you have it?
I do.
All right. Well, that being the case, Bowen Yang's I don't think so, honey. Your time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Diptyque employees the world over. I've gone to several Diptyque stores all across the world. New York, Brooklyn, Los Angeles, Charles de Gaulle Airport, honey. And every employee I've met there has been sort of judgmental in some way, in some form. And I don't think that's a valuable part of the culture. That should not be part of the value proposition. I do not find value in buying a candle from someone who was rude to me at the store.
30 seconds.
Okay? I want to buy my, you know, jasmine, my feu de bois, my bay, even iconically. And I want to buy it and have it be a pleasant retail experience. I am risking my life to set foot in your store in these times. And for you to still uphold that culture is toxic and, yes, poisonous. I know I'm a synonym queen. I think it's worth emphasizing that point that you are all poisonous people.
And that's 1 minute. All employees of Diptyque have now been called poisonous. I think I'm going to speak for a lot of people out there.
Yes,
when I ask, what is Diptyque?
Oh, I'm so relieved to know I'm not the only one who doesn't know.
What is
they're, it? They're a parfumerie. They make candles. They make lovely candles, iconic candles even. And I've really been on a candles kick. So,
I love candles.
You know, I tried to... Le Labo, which is a different...
Yes, yeah, Le Labo. We know that.
On recommendation of my therapist, I went into Le Labo to purchase a birthday gift for my sexual partner last year, or my same-sex sexual partner, no less. And I walked in, and it was also, for me, it's just so judgmental. I walk in, I go, these are some of the scents that he likes. Can you help me pick a gift? And he was like, I actually would never, ever recommend doing that because you never know how it's going to combine with his body chemistry. And it could be really wrong. You could be really wrong if you try to guess. And so I was like, okay, well, I just want to give him something. It's like, I've been dating for like 6 months. I just want to give him a gift. And he's like, I just can't in good conscience help.
He couldn't make a recommendation at the own store he worked at?
So he literally was like, I had to get like a sampler platter of like a bunch of little different ones. And then I gave it. My boyfriend's like, now has like 8 drops of like 30 different scents.
Did you get that Le Labo employee's name?
No, I didn't, but I wish I did.
You should have, because one of Bowen's favorite things is to name employees that have wronged him by name on the pod.
No, I don't do that.
You've done it several times, Bowen.
Once.
My last episode that I was here.
Yes.
You did it about a ski person. Yep. A ski employee.
Todd,
I don't think so, honey. It was the first time I ever said seek treatment, because I said seek treatment to
that
Todd.
That episode was called Seek Treatment.
Yeah. Interesting.
Interesting where you got your start. I don't want this narrative to hold where I am using the podcast as a way to air out my
Oh, then you should behave grievances. The way you behave.
No, I'm not misbehaving when I go buy these things.
Misbehaving. Who?
Also, that's horrid. Body chemistry is a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie that is being made up by perfumeries. Like, it'll smell the same on anybody. I recommended Mattis a fragrance that I love, and then he loved it too. I like it too.
Someone comes into your shop and says, "Can you please just help me pick one out?" It's like, just help them pick one out. You know what I mean? Like, just.
To me,
Shields down.
Whoever this guy was, I think he had something in it for you.
And I even did the thing where I was like, it's for my boyfriend, because I could tell he was gay, and I thought that would kind of establish some sort of, like, camaraderie.
No,
like,
you started a turf war is what you started.
Yeah, I started a huge turf war, and it kind of felt almost like I wasn't the kind of gay he wanted in his store because I had a backpack on.
You need to tell him, you know what? Define normal.
I want to see Divine Normal. Is it a slang? Is it a messenger bag? Is it a tote? Because guess what? I use a backpack around this town.
Exactly.
And that doesn't make me any worse than you, Mr. Leilabo, as I'll call you.
Well, he's already sort of popping off, so we're going to transition from this directly into Pat Regan's I Don't Think So, Honey. Now, you're sort of a renowned I Don't Think So, Honey, or you did win Culture War.
But I do always say that I've retired officially, and this no longer does it affect my legacy. These are all exhibitions now.
So really, in the masterclass that is you in the entertainment industry, this is not a part of that. This is really just for fun.
This won't be included, yes. And this won't be reflected in my rate that I received from masterclass.
You are the Nicki Minaj of I Don't Think So, Honey. You've technically retired, but
yes, exactly.
Your output will still be somewhat consistent. Okay,
even more so. Okay.
All this being said, it's time for Pat Regan's I Don't Think So, Honey. And his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, Apple the company. It's a classic for a reason. They suck. They literally want their customers to die a gruesome, bloody death. That's how much they abhor their customers. They get away with this, like, they get away with a certain, like, thing of not being quite as bad as Amazon. But it's like, you suck so much, and you better get down your ass and thank God Jeffrey Bezos existed, because that distracts everyone from coming for you, Apple. Because I'll tell you what happened is, on election night 2020, I was moving a dresser with my same-sex sexual partner and accidentally sat down for one single second on my 15-inch MacBook Pro computer, and yeah, the LCD screen broke, and it was the one-year anniversary of when I got that computer. So yes, it was the day my warranty ran out. And what I will say is, every single person in Apple I've talked to has been unhelpful, except for the men and women who work in those stores, where I celebrate those geniuses I love. But what I will say is, I sent them my computer a week ago, and I still haven't checked it in. They have my computer, they haven't checked it in.
And that's
one minute.
I don't
think so, honey. Apple, the company. And Steve Jobs, you can take your turtlenecks and shove them up your ass.
Rest in power,
my
Steve Jobs.
God.
Rest in power.
Rest in power to Steve Jobs. And who else did I?
Wozniak, that one.
This episode, I told someone to rest in power earlier on.
I don't know. I forget.
Wes Anderson.
No.
Wes Craven. Sorry.
We have to do an episode soon, which is who's dead, who's not, because we've said so many people that are dead that are not dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
But yeah. Well, first of all, can we say number one, Apple the company found dead. Number two, that sucks for all your subscribers on your masterclass. That wasn't part of it, because I think it would have been a worthy thing. Number three, I have a question for both of you.
Yeah.
Have you, well, not really for Bowen since he has a 12, but Patrick, has your phone started to sort of, like, act weird?
By the way, first of all, Bowen, if you have a 12, you're centrist. Thank you. Now,
DNC.
My phone has started acting weird.
Yeah, it's got
guys,
slower,
this is what happens every year with the new OS.
Well, it's happening again. This year is no different. We can confirm.
What do you have? I have 10R.
I have 10R.
For the longest time, I had SE between a 5 and a 6. It was a huge part of my brand. And then I finally, last summer, made the choice.
I'm really happy you're out of that stage of your life. I'm heartened to hear that it's not just me that sort of, whenever I'm texting, it's like the letters don't show up. And like,
oh, no, that's been happening for me too, yeah.
It's just like Apple needs to, like, just, you have enough money, like, just let us have our products. And like, they try to capture you for lifelong, like it's impossible.
Well, they have.
It's a monopoly. It's not okay. There needs to be fair. There needs to be fair competition in this space. Mm. And that's why I'm launching an electronics and computer brand. And
called Fair Fight.
called Fair Fight. And it's going to be completely run by stupid gays who don't know computers. And we together will build a new world.
That is collectivist at its finest. Collectivism is at its finest.
Collectivism.
Thank you.
Collectivista.
Collectivista.
La collectivista.
It's just like the way Apple's treating me with this computer is like...
Slit. So bad.
Just, it really it's just bad. Hasn't... It just really hasn't felt good. And I'm paying them a lot of money.
So disappointed. So disappointed. Yeah. So disappointed in them, you know?
It's just very knowing that there's no recourse. Like, they're just unchecked power.
I know.
Apple is unchecked power.
And you said it, sister. Say that.
Say that.
Say that.
I finally had to say it. I never wanted to say that. I had to finally say it.
And now we said it. Patrick, final words, closing thoughts for all the readers. Now that you're back, because we can say you are fucking back. The bitch is back.
I think you're back in a big way. The bitch is back in a big way.
In a major way.
Yeah, I think what I would say to my listeners first and foremost is I'm back on Cameo. And it's that holiday season. And I know that you've already seen me in my upcoming projects, but continue to look for me in them. I'm not going to say too much more about what's coming, but you guys hold tight. And I will
hold tight.
My final words are hold tight.
Pat. Oh, Pat, we've all missed you so much.
I'm so glad. Yeah, this is our fourth episode together. And I know that you guys sometimes don't count the lost episode on episode total, but I do count it. And
I do count it.
I've actually turned a corner and I count it.
I count
oh
it.
My
this,
God.
This
God.
Is episode
See, and
five.
That's, and that shows that Bo can grow. It's actually Real Culture number 106. Bo can grow.
No, this is five, including the last episode.
No, last episode. Can we talk about Nicolette?
Nicolette. And then there was
Seek
one
treatment.
More.
Seek Treatment, which Netflix has taken off the air. And... that Netflix has removed that episode. And then Seek Culture.
And like the many Seek Cultures and the many times you've co-hosted with us. You might be the preeminent Las Culturistas guest, and I have an announcement.
Oh my God.
The panel is telling me that Pat Regan has yet again won the Las Culturistas Icon Award.
Oh my God. I would As per accepting it, I would like to say first and foremost that awards are so silly. And this thing that you're giving right now is beautiful, but I don't care about it. But it also means so much, and it means more than any other one because I'm the oldest. I get it.
And
that's true.
And Bo, I think you can agree that it is now custom for, you know how we always end the episode with a song?
Yes, but it is now custom.
It is now custom that the culture award winner ends the episode with a song.
No. Chooses the song. You choose
the song.
Or you can initiate the song.
You can sing with us.
Is it a song of pop culture? Or it can is be like an original track.
Whatever you want.
It can be whatever.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Staring at the blank page before you
open up the dirty window. The ballad version.
Illuminate the words that you cannot find. Reaching for something in the distance. So close you can almost taste it. Showing up your shadow.
And if you want to hear the rest of that song, you can listen to Natasha Bedingfield's CD. Bye.
Bye. Bye.